What is up, group members? Welcome back to the pod. I'm licensed psychologist Dr. J.
I'm licensed psychologist Dr. Jessica Rabin.
And I'm licensed psychologist Dr. Kristen Casey.
We're talking all about bullying, cyberbullying, but we got the biggest bully on this podcast, KBI, out. So we're going to get to dive into this topic freely without getting blasted. So settle in, take a seat, and welcome to group therapy. Oh, KBI is not really a bully. Her love language is sarcasm, and yeah, sometimes she pushes our buttons and we push back. But we're going to actually dive into what is bullying, what is cyberbullying. How about a couple stats that I found that nearly a quarter of high schoolers felt they were bullied some point last year. And this stat ranged hugely when I was trying to figure out how many people have been cyberbullied. I found everywhere on the low end to 40%, all the way on the high end up to 80%. So within our field, this is a common phenomenon. When you just think about those percentages and all the things we talk about within mental health, this is common. But what is it though? How would you define what bullying slash or cyberbullying is?
When I think of bullying, I think of like intentional, repeated behavior, maybe aggressive in nature, but it causes a person harm in some way. Because I think when we all grew up as 90s kids, we think of bullying on the playground, like pushing, shoving, mean words. But then with cyberbullying, that is much more verbal. It could be, I don't know, sharing screenshots of conversations, posting negative information, all that kind of stuff. But I think for me, it's definitely that intentionality to cause harm and repeatedly doing so.
Yeah. I'm glad that you mentioned that because I think the underlying vibe that I get with bullying is it's unwanted. You know, and like you said, it's over the, potentially over the course of time, it's, you know, there's a lot of repetition there. And then I also think, there's somewhat of an imbalance of power, usually, depending on, you know, where you're at and who the bully is and who's, you know, on the receiving end of the bullying. And then I think about it could be verbal, you know, verbal bullying, physical bullying, like we're talking about on the playground. And then I think about social bullying as well of like damaging somebody's reputation, kind of like just what you're saying with screenshots. So I think there's different categories of it. But overall, I think it's unwanted and it causes people harm.
So well said. And I think this, the cyberbullying part, right? This part that's sort of evolved where people can sort of do it behind closed doors and also under fake usernames, aliases. You know, there adds so many different layers to this. Impersonating others can become a form of bullying. The forms it can take, I feel like, in the cyber realm are sort of endless, which is why when I saw this huge range of what people report, whether they've been cyberbullied, it wasn't surprising to me that it was that much higher than sort of these traditional face-to-face, you know, through other means or physical forms of bullying.
Yeah, because I mean, to physically bully somebody, you have to see them in real life, right? I mean, on the internet, you can be user 6443 and you could do this all day. You know, it depends on how much time you have on your hands. But yeah, the range is alarming to me, you know, and I can't imagine being a young person right now in school too, because I noticed like, you know, a lot of the stats are geared towards, you know, people under the age of 18 as well. It must be such a different world to grow up in now than it was when we grew up.
Absolutely. I think about that. You know, because when we were growing up, I mean, yeah, the internet came out in our childhood and like we had AIM, but like, you know, if you were bullied at school, you were bullied at school. Maybe people called your landline if they really wanted to like bully you outside of the school hours, but like it was condensed, not minimizing the impact of that by any means, but with cyberbullying, like people have access to bully and to be bullied 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. People can be physically bullied in school or verbally bullied in school while also being cyberbullied simultaneously. Like you're not, bullies aren't done bullying when the school bell rings. If we're thinking of traditional, like younger kids.
You paint a vivid picture of why this is such a serious topic is because this can be such an ongoing experience for someone.
Yeah.
Which again, yeah, talking about generational differences, wasn't the case with us. You know, by the time I got home, there's a sense of like, no one can really reach me. Of course, then AIM came out and then social media came out, was an undergrad, things changed. But in thinking that somebody, you know, for any number of reasons, and I saw some data that individuals who are LGBTQ report being bullied far more, which again, wasn't too surprising. But again, thinking about different populations and people who are oppressed and stereotyped and held down, it's, you think about how this can become ongoing everywhere, part of someone's world, and how much this would take a toll on someone's mental health, physical health, when they start isolating and maybe not taking care of themselves. Again, the picture becomes really bleak and really serious very quickly.
It really does. And I think about who are normally the bullies. It's usually somebody within your, not your peer group potentially, but maybe your, you know, at school, like around a similar age, technically, you know, if you really think about, when I'm just thinking about the bullying that I've read about, you know, obviously there could be age gaps with bullying. But I do think about, you know, how a lot of times we take in our peers' opinions way more than we do our parents or, you know, caregivers. Like we care about at that age, I think, more about what people around us think about us compared to our family and friends. So then I think if you're internalizing all of that, what if those become your beliefs about yourself? You know, like what, if, like, how does that shake out? You know, if you don't have other people to tell you like, hey, that's not right. Or, and maybe you feel uncomfortable to speak up, you know?
And K-10, when you were just talking about that, it also made me think of like, I can think of experiences growing up or people I knew that because they care so much about what peers think, maybe they were being bullied, but didn't realize that what their friends, quote unquote, because you hear this all the time, especially as somebody that works with a lot of middle schoolers and high schoolers, especially the middle school age, girls in particular, I see this a lot, like their friends are actually bullying them, but they so want to belong and they care so highly about what other people think. And just like you said, K-10, like if they don't have a model or somebody to say like, hey, that's actually not cool or right, they're going to go along with it. And then those internal messages, you know, they might be 20 and be like, why do I have such low self-esteem? Okay, let's go back to middle school when my quote unquote best friends told me how ugly my outfits were and like called me names and made fun of my weight and things like that. But that's what I just thought, you know, belonging was.
A lot of people might question, like, why would someone, stay friends with someone like that? But sometimes people come from family with a lot of trauma, verbal abuse, and something becomes familiar for them. And that's why the impact, you know, if, not even outside the realm of being a therapist, the impact of a teacher, a peer, you know, you as a father figure, mother, you know, aunt, whatever, to be in someone's life, to slow them down, to, you know, support them, but also ask questions of like, yeah, how do you feel around this friend? How does it make you feel about yourself? Like anyone can be a place of reflection and support, but often I think with some of these bigger issues like bullying, it really does take all of us to recognize and be a holding space for people about what they see happening. And I know a lot of times it falls on teachers and people in the school system to recognize, which again, our teachers are overburdened, overwhelmed already, underpaid already.
Yeah.
But I know certainly a number of people who work in the field who recognize these signs. And again, they feel like it's on them to intervene because it's happening right in front of them when it may or may not be happening in the home.
Yeah. Well, and Justin, you brought up a good point about, you know, being modeled these behaviors, because I know we're talking about like peer on peer bullying, but like parents can bully their children or like teachers can bully students and things like that. And if you're being modeled those behaviors, yeah, it takes an outsider to be like, hey, that's not okay. And even thinking back to like our definitions, at least I've seen this working with teens, like some will question, like, is this being bullied? Or is, like, this person just being mean to me? How do we define it? And I feel like, you know, depending on the individual, depending on their perception, their worldview, their life experiences, people can also view things differently. Like, no, that's not bullying. That's just teasing. But for somebody else, they may perceive the teasing as really impactful and negatively impacting their mental health.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's actually a good point, because I hadn't considered that it would – bullying, the definition might vacillate just depending on who's looking at it, you know, and depending on what you might be experiencing or your past experiences. And I think for some people, the first time that they experience bullying, it's just – it's hard because they don't know what's happening. You know, it's like it's happening for the first time and you're like – like you said, is this person being mean or is this actually something serious? You know, like what's going on?
Yeah, there is some interpreting going on the fly there. And yeah, it leads me to, when it is bullying, what have you seen as the effects? I feel like maybe we've all had clients, or maybe I'm assuming that because bullying is so common, but where can bullying lead? How can it impact someone's mental health?
The first thing I think about is depression. Yeah. You know, like if you are constantly being sent messages that, and I'm making this up depending on the bullying the situation, like I'm not good enough, or I'm never going to fit in, or I don't belong anywhere. I'm easily left. All of these messages might lead you to believe like I don't really have a good sense of self, or it could even lead to like suicidal ideation or, you know, feeling that low sense of mood every day. And I think it's hard to notice when it's impacting. I think depression is hard to notice in general, depending on who you are. But I really do think it could lead to like drastic consequences that I think a lot of people don't like to talk about. But I do think about depression and suicidal ideation.
Yeah. If I'm thinking about like the population I work with, mainly teens, I see a lot of school avoidance. I see a lot of, you know, kids that don't want to go to school, anxiety about going to school. They're getting physical illness because of the anxiety, stomach aches, decreased academic achievement. So they used to be a straight A student and now their grades are slipping. I also, going along with the depression, see a lot of hopelessness, especially if they feel like they're bringing the bullying to school personnel and nothing is being done about it. So you see that hopelessness, isolation. Is another one that I see a lot. What about you, Justin?
Yeah, the list is long, right? Like these are one of the things, you know, within the field as a mental health professional. It's like almost anything, social anxiety. I've seen it impact people's eating behaviors and habits. It's pretty all reaching in the ways, because it impacts the way you see yourself, how you interact and interface with the world. And it's not to say it always does, but the source, when you track the symptoms someone's having, you're like, oh, someone's having social anxiety. When the source goes back to bullying, it's like, wow, you know, where else might this be leading for someone? Because we are, as we talked about in other episodes, we are wired to connect with others. And we get information from others and other groups of who am I in this world, especially when you're, you know, coming of age, you know, in adulthood, maybe some of us have buffered up and established a bit about who we are and who we're not, but bullying can still impact us. It certainly can. I mean, I use the block button now in the last few years far often than I used to, because I'll see the same person for three posts in a row blasting how I look and blasting, you know, the way I talk, or blasting something about me. And I will say, like, it's not something I've experienced frequently, but I've certainly experienced, and I don't really know any creators who haven't experienced some form of bullying that's like repetitive from the same user.
Oh yeah. I've definitely experienced that 100%. Same. And it's about like random things that I didn't even think about. And then I started, and then I would get like insecure about them. Like randomly, I'm 34 years old. So it, like bullying doesn't discriminate. It doesn't matter how old you are. Right. And I'm just like, should I be concerned about this or should, and I would have to block the person too. It's tough. And then I think about like now in my mid 30s, I could say, oh, you know, the person's going through something. At 15, I wasn't saying that. Right. I was like, there's something wrong with me. you know, or even in my mid-20s, I was like, damn, I gotta figure myself out.
I love that you all are bringing up adulthood, because I think, you know, we've so far been talking about like school-aged kids, teenagers, you know, that peer-on-peer bullying, but it does happen in adulthood. And Justin, you alluded to this, like, I think, you know, and actually, K-10, you just explicitly said that in adulthood, like most of us, I would say, have developed some skills that maybe we could stand up to bullies more, whether that be like in the workplace, from a parent, from a family member, compared to adolescence. But I'm also thinking of the people that maybe were bullied all throughout childhood, and now they're in positions where they're also getting bullied in adulthood. And it's just like that re-traumatization over and over and over again. Okay, I got out of school, whew, but now I'm at work. Mm-hmm. Or if it's a family system thing, and just how that has to impact their mental health or even impact their self-esteem so that they haven't developed skills to stand up to bullies now as an adult.
Why do you think people bully?
The reasons are bad.
This is also long.
We're all like, so many reasons.
It can be because of a lot. We do know that there can be a bit of people bully because they were bullied. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We do know that exists. We also know people do it, you know, when they're in lows, when they feel bad about themselves.
Yep.
That there is, we certainly see that the phenomenon of people dragging others down. Again, sometimes it is intentionally, sometimes it's, you know, under the current of, I feel so bad about myself. All I know is to sort of project that outwardly. But it can be anything. Jealousy.
Yeah.
I'm jealous of this person. And instead of like maybe learning skills to be like, oh, how do I stop comparing or whatever? I'm going to drag them down and make them feel bad. Certainly in high school and adolescence, we see a lot of relationship type things.
Yeah.
Like, I'm mad you're with this person, so I'm going to tear you both down. Mm-hmm. Like, if you work with high schoolers, middle schoolers for a minute, that is one of the most common themes. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I started harassing them on Snapchat and telling them, you know, commenting on their looks or telling them they're dumb. And it's like, yeah, what's behind all this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think a lot of people think their kid or no one out there would ever bully under any circumstance. But I think a lot of people do when they feel bad about something and they don't know how to express it.
Justin, I love that you just brought up the example of Snapchat, because I was thinking, like, especially for teens nowadays, we see that so much more with cyberbullying, especially that relational. I see that so much. Like, or I can even think of teens that like brought, you know, pulled up pictures in session and being like, look at my ex's new girl. Isn't she like so ugly? Like, just, and it's just part of their culture, which I'm not excusing, but like, that's just how people are dealing with insecurity, jealousy. I think a lot of, at least what I see, is that insecurity, low self-esteem. It like comes from a place of low self-esteem. And I also think, which we've already kind of touched on, if these, especially kids, but adults as well, were modeled these behaviors.
Yeah.
If you grew up in a household where your parents or guardians just talked down to you about how stupid you were, like useless, things like that, you're going to take that out on other people.
And especially like, think that's like normal. Yeah. Or that's just the way to connect, pretend, who knows?
No, exactly. I also think of, you know, kids that struggle socially, or maybe even adults that struggle socially and don't necessarily know how to interact. So like the only way they feel like they can get their message across or be heard or seen is to bully or be mean.
Yeah. The other thing that I was thinking of, as, because you guys hit the nail on the head with all of those, I think the one thing that people probably don't like to talk about is sometimes bullies bully other people to disempower them in some way, like, you know, to make them feel powerless. And I know when we think about young people, we don't want to think that, you know, that people have intentions like that. But sometimes I think that's what it is. Like, if I can disempower them or make them feel helpless in some way, then I'll feel a little better about myself, kind of like what Justin was alluding to before. And I think that's kind of the more insidious bullying that we see, of like, I'm intentionally trying to create a sense of powerlessness within this connection. And that's, it's hard. And then when you're on the other end of that, you just think like, my gosh, I'm stuck. What do I do? And it could lead to so many different things.
I think we see that a lot in racism, bigotry. Yep.
Oh, absolutely.
Of every kind. Mm-hmm. I also think we see this a lot in corporate America, in the workplace.
Yes, we do.
Mm-hmm. I'm intentionally bullying you because mm-hmm. I want to keep this power I have over you and not let you advance on my power mm-hmm. or rise in this company or whatever. Oh, I think it's normalized in capitalism.
I think so too.
I just think it is. It's not to say
yeah.
all capitalism is bad, but unchecked capitalism, I think you see bullying run rampant.
Oh, yeah.
And it's mm-hmm. just accepted.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought that up, Justin, because kind of like so far our discussion has been, it's really been about what I think people stereotypically think of bullying. Mm-hmm. Like kids on a playground.
Yeah.
But yeah. But exactly like you said, it runs rampant and it's kind of accepted. Like how many of us, or we've probably talked about on this podcast, like you have a mean boss, you don't like, and we refer to it as a mean boss. But then if you actually think about, you know, the definitions that we gave at the very beginning, like the intentional mm-hmm. repeated behavior that causes harm. Okay. I'm doing this to you so that you don't get a promotion or that, mm-hmm. yeah, I keep my power over you. That I've seen, not in my personal experience. I've been lucky enough to have wonderful bosses throughout my career, but like where people will just put them down so much, but like that the employee is reliant on them. So they can't kind of leave and escape. Like, well, you need this job. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that made sense. Like, I don't know how to word it better. And I would just imagine, like, going back to all the mental health consequences, how that would impact you showing up for work, how you mm-hmm. feel about your job, your self-esteem. If you do leave that job, how you approach other jobs.
And how traumatized you might be, even applying for jobs or, you know, working around other people. It's I'm really glad Justin brought up the workplace stuff because I think when I think about this, I also don't want to overlook the fact that some of this can be discrimination and harassment in the workplace, you know, and that's, mm-hmm. that's deep and that's hard to deal with. And when we think about like gender differences or racial or ethnic differences, I mean, it runs really deep. And I think for people who are in this hierarchy of capitalism, depending on where you're at, it's really hard to speak up because your job is connected to so many things that are rooted in survival. Like, how are you supposed to speak up about those things? So I do think workplace bullying is really hard to deal with. And I also think it's, you know, for the people who bully intentionally in the workplace, if you're in a position of power, I could say so many negative things right now, but all I'm going to say is, you know, that has lasting effects on people and their identity. And I'm speaking from personal experience because I had a boss that like wrecked me one day. It was just hard. But I do think that people really do struggle at work because who do you tell? HR? Mm-hmm. And then what if HR is just has the best interest of the company? What do? You're in a really stuck place, tough stuff.
Yeah. Well, and K-10, I love that you also brought up like harassment and discrimination because I do think that is different than bullying. Mm-hmm. Like bullying yeah. behavior is yep. that, but like, mm-hmm. you know, we've been talking about this intentional repeated behavior, you know, based on the bully, like having low self-esteem, things like that. But like mm-hmm. discrimination is based on a certain characteristic of the person. Like a person yep. is specifically yep. targeted for their race, sexual orientation, mm-hmm. gender identity, things like that. Harassment, a lot of times think of sexual harassment in mm-hmm. the workplace, which I guess one could argue that those fall under the umbrella of bullying, but I would say they're definitely distinct as yeah. well. I don't know y'all's
yeah. thoughts. I just wouldn't want people to minimize their experience if they are experiencing like harassment yeah. or discrimination. Like that's deep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I know we've kind of brought this up and just going through the, you know, group member questions that we got, we've used the word trauma a lot. And I know we got a lot of questions just about, can bullying lead to PTSD? So kind of wrapping it back around to effects, like, have you all seen that in your work of, you know, true like PTSD symptoms from people experiencing bullying?
Absolutely. Definitely. They're having the traumatic cues in going back to school, in going mm-hmm. back to the workplace, in thinking about mentalizing, talking with a new boss, even though they're again, had left that old situation where they're left feeling stupid or marginalized. Like, I feel like I've heard so many awful stories. And then it's replaying for them. They're having the nightmares about every, again, any PTSD symptom you can have. Certainly it can happen. And for people out there who are like, why, you know, sometimes when I think about trauma, you know, life-threatening things, when it feels, again, when you think about the conceptualization of I can't earn a living or progress or take care of myself or, you know, have any form of control, it is as threatening to oneself as it pretty much can be. And so it's sort of like when you hear these stories and you think about how people were, you know, controlled mentally and got this awful things, you know, sent their way, you immediately can understand that this could lead to full PTSD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've definitely had my host of clients who have had like trauma related symptoms from bullying. And it's hard. I mean, you know, like you described beautifully, like you go into new situations and it's just difficult. You know, you have flashbacks potentially, or you might have really vivid dreams that are really hard to shake. And if you think about sleep, you know, you guys know I love sleep, but sleep is your restorative space to be safe. And for mm-hmm. some people who experience bullying and trauma, it's not a safe place for them anymore. And that's, I mean, it really is just all encompassing.
Mm-hmm. I see a lot of the avoidance PTSD, like especially working with teens, like avoidance of making new friends, avoidance of going on certain apps or playing certain games and things like that because of such severe bullying. And then they like don't form relationships, going back to, you know, all the consequences of like isolation, depression and things like that. And like I obviously don't want to give too many specifics, but like I'm reflecting on a recent conversation with a client of just like I logically know this person is no longer talking to me in my life. Mm-hmm. And it still makes me fearful of ever like trying to form another connection. Cause what if that person is like my bully? And that is no way to live. Tough. Like,
I know.
I mean, bullying, I think so many people, we're talking about it more now, but like when we were growing up, underestimate the long-term impact of bullying.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, Johnny pushed you on the school playground. Come on, get
big,
up.
Big whoop. It's like, well, he's doing that every day. Like, what do I do?
Every
day.
Yeah. And I'm getting physically harmed and I'm scared of now going to school.
You think of just the simple physiological reactions one goes through. And let's just think of this at the most common, which is what we're already doing. Every day, you know you're going to pass somebody who says some shit to you. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember high school vividly.
Oh, yeah.
And if you know at third period, every single day, you have to pass by Peter, and you know Peter is going to say some shit, might push you against the locker, do something. What do you think physiologically is happening to you as the second period bell rings and you're transitioning to third period? Those cortisol levels are going through the moon. And I'm legit. I have clients telling me, I'm thinking about what other hallways I can go down. Can I take the long way? Can I avoid this? And again, this just becomes normalized. Oh, it's normal that you're going to have all this extra cognition going on to protect yourself, and that you're going to be in this fight or flight mode while you're trying to learn. And again, or in the workplace or whatever. But it, when you understand it from that physiological level, you clearly understand that this disrupts everything. How are you going to learn? How are you going to concentrate? How are you going to focus on the work that you had to do?
Mm-hmm. And just to the comment about trauma, I mean, your amygdala is the part of the brain that connects emotion and memories, right? So if you're having that physiological response, whenever you see somebody that looks like Peter, your body is going to think it's under threat, you know? So you're going to have all those responses. And then to learn, like you said, to learn and work and earn a living, that's exhausting. That is so exhausting to deal with.
Another thought that just came to mind as you all were talking, because Justin, you painted such a vivid picture. I'm like seeing myself walking down the hall, Peter and stuff. But that put me in a situation of like, I'm watching this happen. And like, I remember that from elementary school, like seeing kids being bullied and like how that impacts people. Or like, do you say something? Like, do you not? And like, for me personally, like I remember standing up to bullies for other kids in elementary school, but like in the workplace, if you're seeing someone being bullied, do you step in? Are you going to risk losing your job? But then I can only speak for me. For me, if I didn't, I know I would go home and be like, why didn't I do that? Oh my gosh. Like thinking about Peter at school, even if Peter wasn't bullying me, I might avoid hallways so that I don't become one of Peter's victims. So even if you're not a victim of bullying, but you're witnessing it, that can definitely impact your mental health, your hypervigilance. Maybe not to the same extent.
Or maybe.
I don't know. I don't know the research on that.
Yeah.
Off the top of my
head. It's because it creates an environment in which people feel unsafe, you know? And you feel like you don't have autonomy in the way that you think, in the way that you emote, in the way that you navigate. If you're having to go down different hallways or you want to avoid, I mean, that's hard.
I think it relates perfectly into posting on social media. Yeah. You know, how many negative comments, bullying comments does it take before you're like, I don't know if it's worth posting anymore?
Yeah, I feel that way all the time. I'm not going to lie. Like whenever I have a video that goes viral, like I have one right now, it's the comments. Like when I look, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, do I want to even look, you know? And then it makes me think like, maybe I'm not going to post for a little bit, you know, or maybe I shouldn't to avoid that like interaction. But when I really think about it, it's like the more that you post, the more that you feel like you have power. So I just continue to do it. But in the beginning, I didn't feel that way. I was like, oh God, I'm not going to do this.
Well, and I was going to say for like people like us who are content creators, I mean, not that anonymity. Yeah, I said that right. Like makes it any easier or not. Cause I know we've all gotten comments that have really hit us because we've talked about it amongst ourselves and KBI. But like, I'm even thinking, you know, if the comments are coming from people you know on social media, now that it's out for everyone to see, like I'm thinking of my teens that post a picture and then, you know, mean people in the comments, like, why did you decide to wear that? And like other people, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Like jumping in and contributing to the conversation. Cause I feel like a lot of times people just watch it. We're bystanders. I know there's times I've definitely have just been a bystander, which I'm not proud of, but
I think it's real. I mean, I think we've all been in that situation. Like, what do we do? What do we say?
Yeah. And when you think about pass forward, it's like, whether it's in therapy or outside therapy, having these corrective emotional experiences can be literally life-changing for people.
It can.
Which is the ability to come alongside and someone to offer perspective and a corrective view and connection about what you've experienced, categorizing it, labeling it. You know, you talk about social media, a lot of us who are content creators, we talk to other creators and it sort of allows us to move forward, move through. But I think this is the reason a lot of people become isolated is because they've had a lot of these experiences that makes them distrust people in general, which is sort of the extremes of where bullying can go. But having anybody in your life that can hold this space and even just to say that's messed up, like what you experienced is wrong and I'm sorry, goes a long way. We don't always have to say the opposite or undo everything, but holding space and acknowledging that that's really messed up and heavy is usually a great starting point.
Absolutely.
I love that you brought that up because I think for the people who are dealing with the bullying, it could be really vulnerable to talk about those things with people.
Oh, yeah.
So if somebody is saying to you like, hey, I think I'm being bullied, really knowing how vulnerable and how raw that might be for someone to like actually say out loud and then really holding space in that moment because I just think about the clients that I've had that have told me about bullying and how almost like gut-wrenching it was for them to even talk about it. It's just really hard. So to Justin's point, I do think holding space and just having those people in your life that could just say like, yeah, this was messed up, you know, like that was actually not you. That's just messed up. Could be really helpful. Mm-hmm. So I agree.
Well, I'm even thinking with the vulnerability piece, if the feedback you've been getting from people in your life, peers, bosses, teachers, is negative, negative, negative. Mm. The idea of like opening up to someone and you're risking, like, are they going to believe me?
That's so
or
scary.
Are they just going to say what my bullies have been saying, that I'm weak, that I'm lazy, that I'm like, and going back to the conversation we had earlier, kind of the nuance and like defining what bullying is, how people perceive it, you know. But I think to add on to what you all are saying, if somebody comes and tells you they think they're being bullied, this is what's happening, even if you are, maybe don't think it's bullying or think it's, oh, that's more teasing, whatever, their lived experience is real. And if, you know, regardless of the extent of it, it's going to negatively impact them. So if somebody comes to you with that vulnerability, like listening and being attentive, not inserting, well, like, are you sure? Not that I think any of our group members would do that, but I think it is, even like as parents, we might be like, oh, come on, it's fine. Just, you know, tell them to leave you alone. But we don't want to minimize anybody's experience being bullied, or HR, if you're listening, don't minimize that.
Yeah. Yeah, HR. Listen. I have such strong feelings about this. I have to chill. But I think too, like, we have to allow other people's truths to be different than ours. I read that literally on Instagram the other day, and I think it kind of rings true for bullying. Like, you may have not experienced the same level or the same type of bullying as somebody else, but it still might be real for them. Like, really, really raw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So other than, you know, going to a trusted person, what thoughts do you all have on like what people can do if they're being bullied? I mean, I know it depends on the situation, context, age, things like that. But obviously, we're just highlighting telling someone, going to a trusted person. What else?
I think in any person that you have in your life, I think learning to absorb how someone's words, energy, behaviors are impacting you goes a long way. Like, in a moment, noticing, like, every time I'm around this person, I kind of leave feeling lower. Like, I think, again, sometimes we think verbal bullying is this really overt and obvious, like, you're an idiot, you're stupid, you're dumb. Like, and a lot of times it's not. It's sort of at that mean girls level of just sort of picking at, questioning, pushing back, repeated contrarian that is unwanted for you and leaves you feeling bad. If you're starting to assess, every time I spend time with this person, I'm around this person, I leave feeling this way. Of course, in the situations you do have control, note that you can always offer feedback. You can communicate that, see if it can shift. But then really setting those boundaries and pulling back in the situations you can is imperative. But I think I'm, as we've talked in this podcast, I think in situations where the power differential is really big and, you know, like in a workplace and you got to earn a living, it becomes really complicated. Oh my God. Like, processing those with clients becomes so nuanced. And like, there's been plenty of times like we're breaking down what really seems in your best interest, because it is often not straightforward.
There's so many nuances to it. And I think for some people, they might be in a position where they might not be able to do anything, like you're alluding to. They might feel like really stuck, and they might actually be stuck. You know, it might not be just a feeling. So I think it's really important, if you notice that, if you're kind of experiencing this, not to engage in confirmation bias too, about like, hey, if everybody's telling me this at work or at home or whatever, that I'm not cherry picking information in other areas of my life to validate these beliefs that other people might have about me. I think it's really important to have balance in the information that you have about yourself. So I know it's hard when you're in that, but potentially thinking of the ways in which those thoughts or those feelings from other people might not be so valid. And again, this is best suited in therapy, but not everybody has access. So I do think it's just helpful to be intentional, just to add to your point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the only other thing I want to add, which once again depends on situation, is, you know, boundary setting. And I don't just mean like telling the bully stop doing this, but like, Justin, you brought up blocking. Block people. Yeah. I think at least that's on Instagram, there's the options. It's like block this account and any other accounts they make. And yes, people can have different emails, you know, set boundaries. How much time I'm thinking of cyberbullying. How much time am I actually going to spend on social media? Do I private my account and just for the time being. That's all boundary setting. Do I not engage? Which can be hard, especially on social media. You know, do I mean avoidance? We know like is helpful in the short term, but not. But like, do you take different hallways so you don't have to pass Peter because you know that, you know, seeing him upsets you and things like that, once again, comes with privilege. If it's in a boss situation, you know, if you get salaried 9 to 5, leaving at 5, saying like, I'm not going to be here longer. And all of these things are hard and it's nuanced, but even those things, coming back to what can I control, they may seem very small. They may not solve the problem, and it gains you a sense of control over the situation, even if it's just a little bit.
I'm even thinking too about how powerful it might be for someone who's witnessing bullying to step in, because you have way more power than that person who's experiencing the bullying in that moment, because you're disconnected. You know, you're not on the receiving end. You might be witnessing it, of course. But if you notice something and you say, hey, it's actually messed up, you know, and you say it out loud or something like that, of course, depending on the circumstance and the situation, you'll want to put somebody in more danger, depending on how threatening it might be. But if you assess it and you say, okay, if I do say something, maybe it'll give a level of objectivity for this so that this person doesn't think that this is real, like in terms of the things that this bully is saying to them, that could also be super helpful. So just depending on where you're at in that, because I think the bystander effect is so real that we just were like, oh, let's turn a blind eye. Now I just say it because I'm like, let me just use my privilege if I can. Like, I'm just going to say it. But like back then, it's hard depending on what circumstance you're in. But if you do have that power, I think it is helpful to step in if you're witnessing bullying.
No doubt. I know there's something else that I actually enjoy witnessing.
Ooh. Oh,
that was the longest fumbled transition.
That was actually good.
Trying to turn a corner and had no steering wheel.
Yeah,
and no help.
I had no. I was just gonna be like, so the Google Scholar shorts. So I love that we kind of ended on that. I know I asked the question, but I didn't set it up this way because we were just talking about like what can, you know, people who are being bullied do. We didn't really talk about like, how can bullies change their behavior? So the question I'm going to pose to you is, how do you think motivational interviewing impacts bullying behavior in adolescents?
I love motivational interviewing. I don't know, though.
It's got to be helpful.
It has to be.
Okay. Y'all think it's helpful.
It has to be. Because I feel like it would help them get to their own conclusions.
Exactly.
And then from there, they would actually want to feel motivated to actually make a change, because that's the whole point of motivational interviewing. That's my thought.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a 2024 study. I found one that, you know, came out this year.
That new.
And So adolescents were randomly assigned to an intervention group. So that was 5 weeks of motivational interviewing, or a control group, which was just no intervention, to determine the impact of motivational interviewing on bullying and cyberbullying. So adolescents in the intervention group had significantly lower mean scores for peer bullying than the control group at post-test, which was 6 weeks. So they had 5 weeks of intervention, so 6 weeks, as well as follow-up at 3 and 6 months, with findings indicating a reduction was observed in the involvement in peer bullying as aggressors in the intervention group, whereas peer bullying remained stable in the control group. Similarly, adolescents in the intervention group had significantly lower mean score for cyberbullying than the control group at post-test and follow-up tests, where obviously, the people that received the intervention had decreased involvement in cyberbullying as aggressors. And then the authors also utilized the stages of change questionnaire to determine where adolescents were with regard to bullying before the study. And before the study, all adolescents, regardless of group that they were randomly assigned to, were in the pre-intention stage, so like no intention of changing bullying behavior. However, after motivational interviewing, all adolescents in the intervention group, so 100%, I've never seen something like that, moved to the maintenance stage, and the change stage of the control group remain unchanged. So like we saw, if we're doing the stage of change model too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't it contemplation.
Yeah, they use the
action.
Stages of change question. Action, maintenance and then relapse.
Because I'm thinking of how far along to get from pre-contemplation to maintenance. Like, that is a big jump. That is a significant change. Wow, that's really compelling.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you picked a study like this, because I think with a lot of things that happen, phenomenon that happen within our society, we often just think of interventions sort of at the victim level, which is really important. No one's saying that's not important. Mm-hmm. But in and, if we want a phenomenon to stop, we have to think of interventions that stop at the perpetrator level.
Yeah.
And I think this is brilliant. For those who don't know about motivational interviewing, I think, and again, please add to this, because I know there's listeners like, what the hell is this motivational interviewing?
That's true. I should have defined that.
It's a type of therapy that helps create change talk and roll with resistance in sort of this open question asking way that allows people to come to their own internalized reasons to sort of change a behavior, such as bullying others. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you phrase that differently or better or add, but...
Yeah, I think it's described beautifully. The only thing I would add is with motivational interviewing, depending on the intervention, depending on what you're trying to change, sometimes you don't even ask questions. Sometimes you help the person, you know, make statements to get to the point of them kind of asking themselves the questions. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, when I was learning it, you create a lot of space for the person to think and to really think about what was said before so that they come up with that conclusion on their own. Notably, motivational interviewing was first used for smoking cessation for people who are really, really trying to quit a behavior that's really hard to quit. So if you think about bullying and how insidious that might be, this is really, really good data to support, hey, you could actually make a change before it even gets to the person who would actually be a victim of bullying, which I think is incredible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting, and we didn't touch on this in the discussion because we're focusing so much on victims, understandably. But like, bullies have negative mental health consequences themselves too.
Yes.
Like, I mean, the research that I looked at, like higher rates of substance use, higher rates of like involvement in like with law enforcement, things like that. And so, you know, not excusing any bully's behavior, but knowing that there are interventions out there that could even change the path to not only like obviously help potential victims of bullying, but the bully themselves. Like, you don't have to continue this way, I think. And or for parents, maybe a parent's listening and they're like, my kid is the bully. Like, how can I like help them? Motivational interviewing, have them reflect on like, why am I doing this behavior? What would, you know, be positive aspects of not doing this behavior? Things like
that. Because I think there might be people listening that might feel like a little bit of shame or embarrassment of like, gosh, I bullied somebody one time. Like, you know what I mean? I have that feeling of like, gosh, like I hated that part about myself. And there was part of you that was most likely struggling with something, you know, something was going on at that time. You know, not to say the bullying that, you know, happens is valid or it should happen by any means. But I think that when we are able to be in a position like that and we're able to have compassion for the other person and really see how it might be affecting them, and try to see the trajectory of what their life might be like if I continue this behavior. Sometimes that does help people too. I don't know if there's research on that. Just thoughts.
I don't know.
Other things that I really enjoy.
Yeah.
Are the polls. I didn't know how to. We're great
at transitions. We're so bad at transitions. We probably just need to like.
Maybe we just cut them out. we were going to cut out the polls because Justin hates them, but we all said we need them because our group listeners love them. So this week we talked about bullying. The first one that I asked was, have you ever been bullied? Yes, I've been bullied. Yes, I've been cyber bullied. Yes to both or no. What do you think was the highest?
Yes to both, given I feel like most of our – oh, I'm trying to go back. The generational differences. I feel like most of our listeners were millennial followed by Gen Z. So I'm going to say both.
I'll say both, 44%.
Ooh. Yes to both was 24. But regular old bullying was actually a 58.
Wow.
Wow.
I don't know if it's the way I think it's the way I potentially worded it. Because if I put in real life bullying, I feel like this would have been different.
In real life.
Yeah. IRL, you know.
IRL bullying.
IRL bullying. What are some effective ways you've dealt with bullying? We got so many amazing comments of talking to trusted people, fake it till you make it with confidence, As an adult, I can now reflect that healthy people don't bully. Maybe those people are hurting, ignoring them, reporting the situation to my union or my boss, avoiding them. A lot of ignoring, not giving them power, leaning on my friends. Really, really great suggestions for people who may potentially experience bullying.
I did want to highlight that ignoring, because it isn't something we've talked a lot about. Mm-hmm. A lot of us will say that's such sage wisdom is a lot of the reasons people are doing this is for some sort of interaction rise mm-hmm. in attention.
How do we not talk about this yet? You're right.
I know. And
yeah.
What in the
I just joined. K-10 probably doesn't have our thing up.
About attention.
I just feel that we cannot do an episode on bullying and cyberbullying without addressing Justin bullying me about the way I say frustrated. Listen, and how much shit that this is.
Was it repetitive or was it just interpersonal feedback?
Was it unwanted?
Or was it bullying for a way that I say a word?
I don't know if it meets our definition, but if you're putting it out there, I'll absorb it as feedback. That was unwelcome interpersonal feedback of you not pronouncing the word correctly.
Guys, this was such a beautiful audio and all of this.
I have to say, how many times have I told you how great your audio is now? And my microphone just broke before this episode. And my audio sounds like trash for this whole episode.
It's karma.
So, I believe
that's what this is.
I will say, KBI, you just came in at a perfect part, though, because Justin was just talking about how, like, bullies are looking for a reaction out of people. They're looking for attention. And then you, popped in. And you're like, so remember last week when you bullied me?
Remember this shit, guys?
I feed right into it. We're happy you're here.
Yeah, are you staying for the whole episode?
I'll stay for a couple minutes. Tell me about the polls.
Okay.
Done with his thought? Okay.
Don't feed into it.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Have you ever been bullied at work? Yes, no, haven't thought about it. You could get bullied at work, ? What do you think is the highest?
That KBI gesturing towards us. Or maybe me, I don't know.
I feel like it's either going to be yes or I haven't thought about it.
Those were the two top. Yeah, go ahead. Oh, sorry, Justin, no, I keep cutting you. Am I bullying you now? Like, I'm sorry. I keep cutting you off. I'm subconsciously bullying Justin. The top one was yes at 52.
Okay.
And then haven't thought about it was the next one. And that was it. And then we asked you to ask us questions about bullying. I'll get that right one day.
Is that your transition? That was the smoothest
transition
we've had tonight. Yes, as always, thank you all for your questions. Kind of like we said a couple episodes ago, we're trying a new format where we try to answer or guide our discussion from a lot of your questions. So we have a few questions left that we wanted to spend a little more time on answering. So the first one comes from Caitlin from California. She asked a two-part question. How do you think bullying and cyberbullying have changed since technology is ever evolving? And do you think technology has affected the bully's mental health and reasons or responses to bullying others?
Have at it, KBI.
I was also going to say, so I didn't highlight this part. She did say, sorry, I'm only reading this because KBI's here. Sorry if the questions don't make sense. I didn't go to practice my writing skills as I, like KBI, did not write a dissertation.
Let's go, Caitlin.
You made sense, Caitlin. I'm here for it.
Yeah. I'm here for it. I mean, I do think that it plays an absolute role in it, again, I haven't been here this whole time, so I don't know what has been covered, but the ability to hide behind a screen is a huge proponent of a lot of bullying and not facing consequences because of that. Because, I mean, we see this happening in our comment section all the time, and it's user 47328. And I always ask myself, would that person actually say that to my face? Maybe. But maybe most not. Of the time, maybe not. And I think it does. And even to the bullies, I always say too, like, what are they also experiencing online and on social media? But again, the ability to create a degree of separation from that.
I also think there are so many more like
platforms to bully on. Like, if you're thinking about like the ever evolving technology, like we joked earlier, okay, internet came out, we had AIM, cool. But like, you know, now it could be Instagram, Twitter. Well, Twitter's not a thing, X, like TikTok, all of these things. And I did actually look, because obviously I'm doing the questions, I looked up a stat, because I just like Googled, like, has cyberbullying increased over the years? So in 2016, 10.3% of students said that they had stayed home from school because of cyberbullying. And then in 2023, that number nearly doubled to 19.2%. So that was just one stat I found. So I think with the increased access to technology, with regard to Caitlin's second part, like, how does it affect bullies' mental health, reasons, responses to bullying? I know we covered a lot of reasons people bullying, but I also think with anything, if there's increased access to do it, you know, I don't want to say like you don't have to have a reason, but like if you're feeling bad about yourself, which is one thing that we already said, like, okay, now I can bully so many more people at one time, like, and to feel better.
I also think something that we've all seen is when the comment sections like turn, meaning bullies get a lot of support.
Yeah.
And I think it's also an unfortunate mechanism. A lot of you see negative comments or bullying comments get checked, but I've seen comment sections where for whatever reason, there's just a lot of support for something that is clearly, and I know this is something we're going to talk about here in a minute, not just like a different point of view, but literally bullying, pulling somebody down.
Mm-hmm. And then nasty.
Nasty. Yeah. Oh my God. And you're like, you see all these likes and comments of like, yeah. And you're like, God, it's beyond disheartening. Like, it's disturbing.
It is. It really is. Because then I wonder, like, are people, and then I'm thinking, like, is it, you want to be in the in group? I'm putting it in air quotes. You know, like, do you want to be a part of a group where people are louder and, you know, the comment, and you're part of that comment section? I think sometimes people like misconstrue that sometimes. And they're like, okay, if I'm a part of this, then I'm a part of something. But you're in essence, you're putting somebody else down, you know, and that's not fun and that's not kind.
Yeah. Like, hearing you all talk about like the support, like, on the one hand, I'm like, oh, it may like encourage the bully more. But we've also talked about like isolation. And I do wonder if cyberbullying has led to more isolation on the bullies part as well. Because we do know that although social media can be such a good connection for people, it is also very isolating. Yeah, because you're hiding behind a screen.
And then I wonder, like, to your point, Jess, if those bullies are talking to other people about the bullying they're doing, because they might be isolating too. They might be anonymous completely, you know, and then you're kind of holding the secret, and who knows how that affects you? I don't know.
It's definitely changed. I don't know. Like, I think we've highlighted so many things. So I'll jump to that question that Justin was alluding to. So anonymous from the United States, she said, I've seen where the subjectivity of the term bullying can sometimes result in unfair or unwarranted discipline, especially on social media, where an individual disagrees with someone, a law, a system, etc., and is labeled as a bully and then proceeds to get bullied. Goes on to say about like cancel culture and stuff. My question becomes, at what point does conflict become bullying? When it comes to taking disciplinary action, what if one person perceives it as bullying and the other perceives it as a disagreement? Which I thought was a really good question, especially on social media.
Is there potential that your comment is harming someone, causing injury, discomfort, especially around who they are as an individual? I don't think there's a straight and easy answer here. I think this is the gray. But I think a lot of people don't self-reflect of, there's a lot of, makes someone feel bad about who they are. It's an issue. Or it infringes on their rights, which we get political quick because these are the conversations we see every day. But people don't stop and reflect of like, I'm just asking a question, or I just don't understand. But like, in you pressing this, are you once again pushing someone down who's been oppressed, had their rights taken away, and has to fight just to exist in society. These are things to reflect on. And yes, I will agree, sometimes in offering different opinions on things, people can get really heated, even if it's non-political about someone's rights, in that it might be for someone else, this discussion might be really triggering for them. Maybe because of trauma, maybe because, you know, I'm thinking of myself in certain situations of, like, you know, having a brother who died from a drug overdose. You know, things can feel really personal, where for you it doesn't, but for me it does. Mm-hmm. And so I think in having compassion for other human beings, you can understand for someone else, it might not just be some open debate discussion, but this is something that carries a lot of weight. And I think that's just in having compassion for the vastness of human experience. And if things are getting elevated and escalated, it probably is time to step back, mm-hmm. especially in the comments. Where do you think this is going to go? Like, it's time for some of that just to be pulled back. And I've certainly seen comment sections where you can tell there's sort of an even keel conversation happening back and forth. But there's also conversations where you can see immediately that this person jumped in inserting an opinion that is going to hurt a lot of people.
And personalizing it. You hit the nail on the head, Justin. I think when people are personalizing it and they're not talking about the topic, but they're talking about the person and who they are. Yeah. And that's kind of where it goes south. And it is gray. But I seriously love that you brought up the fact that for somebody who is experiencing something, just say they're discriminated against or they're a minority, their truth is the truth for them. And it is the truth for most, you know, most people who might be in a similar boat. And if you are saying, oh, I disagree because of A, B, and C, you're disagreeing on a principle thing. You're not disagreeing on a lived experience that has really deep consequences for somebody who's discriminated against and a minority and all that stuff. So mm-hmm. to you, you know, just to highlight your point, Justin, like to you, you might be having like almost like an academic discussion about like, oh, well, this is how I think and all that stuff. And that's fine. And at the end of the day, you're going to close your phone and you're going to go about your day. And that other person is going to feel the weight of that conversation because it has something to do with who they are as a human. And I think that that's kind of where it stems from. That might be bullying, discrimination, harassment versus, hey, it's just a conflict and it's just a difference mm-hmm. of opinion. When we're talking about people's lives and their livelihood and autonomy and all that stuff, I think it is gray and it's nuanced and everybody has an opinion. And again, everybody has the right to an opinion. I think it's really important to think about, is my opinion warranted in this situation right now? You know, if I make this comment, even if it is just my opinion, what is the weight of that? Like you said, how is this going to play out? Because I think that's what people fail to realize. Like, I want my voice to be heard. Mm-hmm. Great. And at what cost, you know, at what cost to that other person? So again, I think it's nuanced. There's no right way to think about it in every situation. But I do think, like, if I'm thinking about, oh, I have an opinion on a topic that I have no lived experience on, just say, you know, this is a nuanced topic. And this person with lived experience is telling me their truth. I'm probably going to weigh their opinion a little more heavily than mine. Cause I don't have that lived experience. I don't know what that's like, you know? So I could go on and on. I'm going to cut myself off.
No, you all make really, really, really good points and kind of taking it a step back, because I think there are certain topics that, like we were talking about, if you are being overtly racist or talking about their life, like there are things that regardless of it's just wrong.
It's just wrong.
But I think one of the challenges of social media, and if we're thinking on the level of like, well, I'm just perceiving this as a disagreement, somebody else is perceiving it as bullying. It is written text. Like, social media is so hard to understand, like, what is their tone in saying this? Like, what is, you know, the intention behind it? Because, like, not the same thing at all, but because you all know I love to get in conversations with people on the internet. I'm getting better. But, like, I can't remember exactly the context of it, but the person was like, I'm not going to keep arguing with you. So I asked her, I said, can you tell me what I said to you that feels like I'm arguing with you? Because from my perspective, we were actually having a civil conversation of alternating, like, of different perspectives. And she wasn't able to tell me what I was arguing. But like, I think that happens so often on social media. Like, we, once again, putting the topics that you all were talking about aside, like, if it's a true just difference of opinion, like, we'll take something nuanced. Like, I really like pineapple on pizza, and somebody else says they don't like pineapple on pizza. You know, we can't understand tone. We can't understand, you know, like, social media doesn't allow for nuance. So if I'm coming in heated because I already got into an argument with my partner about pineapple on pizza, and then I'm taking it to social media, I'm going to perceive somebody that disagrees with me as an attack. And I might perceive them as bullying me when in reality, I'm just misreading. And so I did want to highlight that because I think it's also, yeah, there is no tone on social media. So I think it's so, we are looking at things, looking at words through our own lens, mm-hmm. and what we're assuming
right.
the other person means or their tone.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
So this was a really interesting question. I wanted to get y'all's thoughts. I did do some research, but Amanda from Canada asked, why doesn't the ACE scoring test include bullying? She goes on to say that she has been bullied extensively throughout elementary and middle school, and it still affects her as an adult. So does this count towards her ACE score? I had to do research on this, but I didn't know if either of you had any thoughts or knew why bullying wasn't included.
I read this question. I was like, great question. I didn't have any sort of... I actually had to scroll back through the ACE assessment and be like, there's none? Like, I just like refreshed because it was surprising. I don't know the rationale, and I am curious about it. And I think it's a great point.
Yeah. Do you know K-10, or do you want me to?
No, I don't. Sorry, my dogs are going crazy. No. I don't. Same with Justin. I was researching it too, and I was like, wait, why? You know?
So the only thing I found, so the ACE study was conducted in the mid 90s, and the items on the original ACE were selected because at that time, there was already research that those experiences in childhood had negative outcomes later on in life. So they randomly picked things. There was no justification for why only certain items were chosen. But if you look at the ACE, it's really about maltreatment. So like sexual abuse, physical abuse, or household dysfunction. And so it literally eliminates anything that happens outside of the household. And I know like we have talked about ACEs here, and it's interesting to, I don't know my ACE score, but my ACE score is really low. However, yeah. I've definitely had traumatic experiences that were not encaptured in that during childhood. And so just to validate Amanda, like this is a criticism of the ACE that it doesn't include. And I actually found a 2015 study that looked to see if like the ACE survey could be improved and expanded on. And they included things like peer victimization, peer isolation, rejection, community violence, and found that yes, all of those significantly predict negative mental health symptoms. So like going back to this, does this count as an additional to my ACE score? Like not technically if you're using the ACE, but like, I think if we're thinking of adverse childhood experiences, I would argue bullying absolutely can. Mm-hmm.
How could it not?
Yeah. Because think about all the mental health effects that we've talked about. I mean, how could it not affect somebody in a negative way?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and I know, Justin, you said you had to go back because we mentioned this, you know, we think of peer bullying, but like there's nothing about like parents bullying. It's like physical or sexual abuse, mm-hmm. right?
Right, right.
So I'm sure there are people that grew up in households where they were bullied by the adults in the house.
Absolutely.
And that's not even
definitely
captured.
Like
right.
captured.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I love that question.
It was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Any additional thoughts on the ACE? It made me think.
Made me think too. Yeah.
Okay. And so the last question we have comes from Cheryl from British Columbia, Canada. Yeah, that's BC, right? BC, Canada, British Columbia, I'm going to guess. And in short, I'm going to summarize, has children, three or teenagers that are neurodivergent and has a lot of concerns about keeping them safe from cyberbullying and making sure that they don't bully someone else. So was just seeking tips in the realm of cyberbullying, social media for neurodivergent individuals. So specifically ADHD, autism, but any thoughts that you all have on bullying and neurodivergence, broadly speaking?
Yeah, it definitely gets nuanced. I know the question was about like not wanting them to bully someone else. I think in it, having open conversations of like, do you ever comment on people? Do you ever, you know, what are the types of things you say to people on Snap? Like whatever form of social media they use, having an open line of conversation about it that's embedded in curiosity, you know, might uncover some correctable. I mean, from like a top-down lecture type, encouraging them of like, you know, if you're going to say something, if it's not kind or encouraging or kind of curious, you know, not everything needs to be commented on or said. And, you know, validating for some people, it might be kind of hard for them to know, like, could this be hurtful? You know, could it be? Or might I be wording this in a way that someone might feel sad when they read it? Like, I validate for some people that might be hard for them to get down to the nuance of it. But I think in telling people to pause and not everything needs to be commented on, and we want comments to come from either a curious or a kind place. I mean, I think those things can help, but I don't think anything helps as big as having an open line of dialogue, that you're not coming from a non-judgmental place, but you would like to be able to have conversations with them about how they use social media. I think is something that's going to help you, you know, when they're 10, when they're 15, when they're 25, because every situation just has so much nuance.
That was beautifully said. Just to add to that, I would even say, like, you know, there's going to be a lot that's out of your control, you know, there just is, even for them. I mean, they might, you know, be experiencing something on social media or, you know, be commenting on social media and you might not know about it. And, you know, they might not know it's bullying. Like, you know, to your point, Cheryl, I know that there was like a lot of concern about unintentionally, you know, bullying and stuff like that. But I do think coming up with somewhat of a plan, you know, just to add to Justin's is like, you know, if they're noticing like, hey, I'm in deep dialogue with somebody, you know, or like I'm going back and forth, how is that making you feel? How do you think that other person might feel? And what's the goal? What's your goal of the conversation? Because I think on social media, we just comment to comment and we just don't think about like what the potential consequence might be. So I think, you know, having an open dialogue, like Justin saying about, if I say this, what do I think my goal might be? Or what do I think the consequence might be? Or how do I think what somebody might feel? And I think linking it to the potential perspective of somebody else might be helpful too, to be more intentional with commenting. I just know it's so easy to like send a comment and hit send, you know? So I get it's probably hard to feel a sense of control over it.
Yeah. And Cheryl, I know in your question, you mentioned like impulsivity with ADHD or not reading social cues. So I think it can also be helpful, like giving concrete examples of bullying, or maybe examples of how someone might respond, you know, if you say something hurtful or harmful. And I know you're worried about the unintentional bullying and also mentioned like keep them safe from cyberbullying. I echo what K10 said, like not everything is in your control. But I think on that aspect of like, how can you help prevent them from being victims of cyberbullying, you know, teach them how to assert and advocate for yourself, themselves, and stand up for themselves. How are they using social media? Coming to you if they're like, hey, maybe they're not sure. Like, hey, I didn't like what this person said. Is this bullying? You know, teaching them to set boundaries. And I mean, this can apply for a lot of people. I think the impulsivity of ADHD, if there's strategies that have helped with impulsivity in other realms, implementing those strategies. But it is hard, as someone who has a kid, but she's not old enough to be on social media. I think of these things too, because there's just so much out of our control. And hopefully you have the, you know, relationship with your kids that you can be open about your concerns with them and they can come to you if they have concerns.
Love it.
Justin, you're doing
it. Oh, it's me. Wow.
Is it me?
Isn't it always a pleasant surprise when you realize all eyes are on you because you didn't realize your role? And you two would never bully or throw me under the bus. But hey.
Waiting a little bit. It's okay if we're a little slow.
We just stare at you.
No matter what the topic is here on Welcome to Group Therapy Pod, some of them are heavier, some of them are lighter, some of them are a mixture in the middle. We're glad you're here. We're glad you feel comfortable with us to ask these tough questions that are, you know, always there's nuance. And as much as we love trying to be helpful, nothing's going to replace you getting in front of a mental health professional with some of these nuanced questions if you can. But we love that you trust us, that we come from a place of research, and we try our best to just provide you information. We love the nuanced conversations and the curiosity. And y'all bring it every single week. We're glad you're here. And you know what? We're going to see you next week right back here on Welcome to Group Therapy Pod. Thank y'all.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.